Oh, I was going to say, well, border radio is definitely on the list of show topics, if not more than one show topic. I know my favorite border radio episode that we've ever done.
Station on the ground reporting. News, odds, and topics. Yeah! Here I am, your main man, reporting from Jam Jam. On 16,000 kilocycles FM, and 1,000 megahertz on the ground. Yeah!
Hi, I'm Jack from Saugerties, and I'm at the radio station with my sister Katie. You're listening to WGXC Aqua. Have a nice day!
Tune in to Radio for Open Ears Wednesday, July 24th. Special Counsel Robert Mueller has rescheduled his testimony for that day, and you'll hear it live on the radio, coverage from the Pacifica Radio Network. Live Wednesday, July 24th, we're interrupting regularly scheduled programming to bring you the Robert Mueller testimony from Washington, D.C. on the radio at 90.7 FM.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Velo Domestique Bicycle Shop. Professional bicycle services at 437 Route 295 in Chatham. Information at www.velodomestique.com or 518-392-3010.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Gunel Reznikoff of Chatham, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant. Sarah Captain reports for Columbia Green Media that Greene County Administrator Sean Groden says that someone, he does not know who, has been auctioning off parts of the former Greene County Sheriff's Office attached to the former jail in Catskill without authorization. The former jail and sheriff's office closed in April 2018 after being deemed unsafe. The jail was first used in 1905, and some consider it historic. Catskill resident Pat Ruck said her recent Airbnb guest told her they paid someone $700 for doors, a staircase, and other items from the building. A June 5th public safety meeting authorized auctioning off a few kitchen items, but nothing more. Groden said, and I quote, "I haven't determined how we went from kitchen equipment to wood molding," end quote. He also did not know who was involved in the expanded sale. Greene County Sheriff Greg Sealing is retiring later this year and was just in the news saying he would defy a county nepotism policy and deputize his son before the end of the year. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Sarah Tampton is reporting for Columbia Green Media. Greene County Administrator Sean Groden is now admitting that it was he who approved the sale of various architectural details from the county sheriff's former office on Bridge Street in the village of Catskill. Groden initially pleaded ignorance when rumors of the sale arose during a public safety committee meeting last week. At the time, Groden insisted he did not know who was selling the items and said the auction was unauthorized. On July 15th, Groden fessed up, confirming he green-lighted the sale. Groden said, and I quote, "I actually authorized it in an email I must have read at 80 miles an hour. In parentheses, there was wooden windows and doors that I must not have caught," end quote. He said the email was sent from the Greene County Sheriff's Office. He said, and I quote, "I responded and told them to proceed. I told the board I take full responsibility for it," end quote. Five doors were sold for $250, as well as some wood moldings that were not picked up. Groden said, and I quote, "We are asking the winners to return the items. They won fair and square, so it's the purchaser's option," end quote. Local historic preservationist Meg Nowak said last month, the jail, which opened in 1905, is a historical asset to the community. She said, and I quote, "To ignore that legacy is irresponsible in a sense, and it's really sad," end quote. Deputy Greene County Administrator Warren Hart said county officials want to demolish the office building and jail, but leave a carriage house on the property intact. $500,000 has been set aside for the demolition. Nowak said that due to the historic significance of the property, the county must get permission from the State Historic Preservation Office and the Village Planning Board for demolition. The legislature will discuss the fate of the old jail at a workshop meeting 6 p.m. Wednesday, July 24th in the Caucus Room at 411 Main Street in Catskill. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Sarah Tapton at Columbia Green Media updates the ever-changing story from Greene County Administrator Sean Groden about a recent online auction of county items that has been called both unauthorized and allowed. Last week, Groden said he did not know who was auctioning off parts of the former Greene County Sheriff's Office attached to the former jail in Catskill without authorization. He said the online auctions for kitchen equipment had been approved, but nothing else. Groden said at the time, and I quote, "I haven't determined how we went from kitchen equipment to wood moldings," end quote. Then a few days later, Groden claimed he had approved the sale of various architectural details from the county sheriff's former office on Bridge Street in the village of Catskill. Groden said, and I quote, "I actually authorized it in an email I must have read at 80 miles an hour. In parentheses, there was wooden windows and doors that I must have not caught," end quote. The email was sent from the Greene County Sheriff's Office, he said. He said, and I quote, "I responded and told them to proceed. I told the board I take full responsibility for it," end quote. But now a screenshot that the newspaper says was from the online auction list, and I quote, "vintage windows, doors, radiators, floors, molding, and more," end quote, which seems like many types of items that Groden has not publicly disclosed approving. It is unclear how many items were sold at the online auction, how much money was raised, and where those funds went. But Groden wants the items that were not supposed to be sold back. Groden said, and I quote, "We are asking the winners to return the items. They won fair and square, so it is the purchaser's option," end quote. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Sarah Tapton reports for Columbia Green Media that previously Greene County officials said the former county jail was unusable, making the building's condition another argument for building a new $70 million jail in Cooksackie. Now, though, those same officials are spending money with an engineering firm to determine the cost of bringing the building up to code. Greene County legislators voted for a $39 million bond last September based on an 80-bed jail proposal. Greene County Administrator Sean Groden has been saying this year, as opposition to the jail increased, that would be a 48-bed facility. Once approved, that changed to a 60-bed facility, the current line from Groden. Last October, Greene County Legislator William Lawrence, the Republican of Cairo and chairman of the Public Safety Committee, said on average, Greene County residents can expect a 6.73% tax increase next year because of the construction. The tax increase are similar across the county, with Windham residents seeing the lowest increase of 6.48% and Ashland residents receiving the largest increase of 6.91%. Former Windham Representative Lori Torgensen said, and I quote, "I continue to believe this is going to be the biggest waste of county resources in the history of Greene County or ever in the future. Those of us who thought of alternatives are on the right side of history," end quote. Currently, Greene County is sharing jail services with Albany and Columbia counties, even though many Greene County legislators continue to claim it is illegal to share jail services with neighboring counties. The Greene County Legislature will hold a workshop on July 24th to discuss the future of the former jail located on Bridge Street in Catskill. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com.
The National Weather Service in Albany predicts a sunny and hot Sunday. There's a 20% chance of a shower or thunderstorm, but it should be mostly sunny most of the day with the highs in the low 90s and a heat index feeling in the high 90s. Sunday night should be partly cloudy with a low around 67. Then there's a 70% chance of rain on Monday with a high of just 76 degrees. Showers are also likely on Monday night with a low around 62. Tuesday, there's a 30% chance of showers, mostly before 2 p.m. Then it's mostly cloudy with a high of 72 and a low around 56. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, radio for open ears.
Welcome, radio listeners. You're listening to Bound by Books Youth Radio on WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, and Hudson, listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm Emily. I'm the director of the Hudson Area Library, and I'm from Hudson.
I'm Amelia. I'm a student at Hudson High School, and I'm also from Hudson.
And we're here every week talking about books.
Books we love, books we hate.
Bookish things. Mm-hmm. All that good stuff. And we're often with our friends, Mashuda and Fahim.
But they're not here today.
Yeah, sometimes our schedules don't work out. But aww, someday we will all be together again.
Yep.
And it'll be lovely. But in the meantime, I've got Amelia.
Hello.
Hello. We're going to talk about some books. Mm-hmm. Hooray. So you finally finished Six of Crows, right?
Yeah, I did.
I know at one point you really liked it. And at one point you're like, I like it, but I'm not sure if I'm going to be needing to read the rest of the series.
I still don't know if I'm going to be needing to read the rest of the series. I mean, it ended on a cliffhanger, but I'm still like, do I want to put the time in to read the rest of the series or do I want to read other stuff?
Hard to say.
Right now I'm reading other stuff.
Mm-hmm. So what are you reading now?
One of Us is Lying, another book battle book.
Yay.
It's very interesting. I'm about 50 pages in so far. I haven't been able to read it a lot because I went to New Jersey for 4 days for a dance competition and all that.
How was dance competition?
It was pretty good.
What'd you do? Like, what kind of dance?
Hip hop, tap.
You're still recovering. You heard a yawn.
I got home at midnight last night because we ended up having to dance again because we were chosen to be in like the top whatevers. Oh, cool.
The top whatevers.
Yeah, I don't remember what it's called, but we got picked to dance again for the judges and we didn't get home until midnight. Wow. Then we had to unpack and I got to sleep at like maybe 1 a.m. So yeah.
Late night.
I slept until about 10 this morning.
It's good to sleep in after a busy weekend of dancing.
Dancing and boardwalks.
And boardwalks.
Yeah.
What one does in Jersey.
Yeah.
So can you tell us what One of Us is Lying is about so far?
It is about these 5 students who end up in detention together, and one of them ends up dying while in detention because he has a severe allergic reaction to something. He has a peanut allergy, and they discover that someone seems to have like planted a lot of peanut oil in the water he was drinking, and then proceed
not
like
cool. Murder's not cool.
Yeah,
just saying.
Yeah, but he ran a gossip app that was set to post something about all 4 of the other students who were with him, so they're all suspects.
Motive.
Yeah.
So what do you think of it so far?
It's interesting. I think I know what one girl's secret is already. As for the others, I have no idea.
Yeah, that one's fun. I was so excited to figure out whether or not my guess was right, because at some point I decided who I thought was the murderer. So I was just waiting and waiting and waiting to know if I was right. And I don't remember who I thought it was, and I don't remember if I was right, and I don't remember who the murderer was. But I had a real fun time reading the book.
Cool.
Good times. Yay. So I hope you like it, too.
Yeah.
And for those out there listening, the Battle of the Books is an annual trivia battle. There's one for middle schoolers and one for high schoolers.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a team for the high school battle. We don't have a team for the middle school, but maybe some year we will if enough people are interested. Mm-hmm. And basically you read the same books over the summer as a team, and then you come one day to the Battle of the Books and you do trivia battles with other teams from other libraries about the books.
Yep.
And the questions are really crazy specific.
Yeah.
And I don't know how you answer them. I mean, sometimes you don't.
Yeah, sometimes we don't
sometimes
know.
Sometimes they're tricky. Sometimes both teams don't know the answer. Sometimes both do, but one buzzes in faster.
An awkward stretch of silence while both teams are like, neither of us know. Can you please just...
Yeah. And then somebody goes, buzz.
Yeah.
Best guess. And like tries to guess it. Because some of the questions are trivia about a book. So it'll be like, in One of Us is Lying, who has a peanut allergy? Although it wouldn't be that easy.
Yeah.
But in some of them, it's like, in which book did a character say, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And then you have to guess the book. So sometimes it's easier to guess than others, but it's really fun. I wish I could do it, but I'm too old.
Oh, no.
But I get to read the books.
Yeah, that's fun.
So that's fun. So I've read all of the books this year already. Yay. So I read most of them last summer, and then I read the one that I hadn't read this spring. But now this summer, I'm reading a bunch of books that are in consideration for next year's battle.
Ooh.
So that's really fun. So I basically, for my summer reading each summer, now that I'm on this committee, is just reading tons and tons of teen books. Mm-hmm. And most of them are very good. One that I read recently that I really liked, which maybe will be in the battle next year, maybe not, we'll see. It's called They Both Die at the End by Adam Silvera. And it's a speculative fiction novel set in a world that's similar to our world, except that there is a, I guess I don't know if it's a company or a program or an organization called Deathcast, who makes a phone call around midnight every day to the people that are going to die that coming day. Oh. And so if you get that call, you hear that special ringtone, you know it's not good news.
Yeah.
And so the story follows our two main characters, Mateo Torres and Rufus Emeterio, who both get a call from Deathcast on September 5th, just after midnight, informing them that that is the day that they're going to die. And so it follows them as they decide how to spend that last day. Neither of them know each other at the start of the book, but they connect through an app called Last Friend, which is a way that you can connect with somebody that's sort of going through this experience and make a new friend, your lost new friend. And so they connect through this app and then meet up, and it follows them on their adventures in this final day of their life. And it's very interesting.
It is interesting.
It makes you think, like, what would you do if you knew when you were going to die? Like, not necessarily, they don't tell you how or why or when exactly in the day. You just know this is your last day. Hmm. And so I was trying to think, like, what would I do? It's hard to know because part of you is like, well, what if I do this and that ends up being how I die? Or, like, do I want to be with the people I love when I die? Or do I want to be by myself? Or do I want to, I don't know. It's hard to say.
Either.
I was like, I have no idea what I would do.
It's a lot to think about.
Yeah. I was like, I'd want to talk with my family, I guess, and hang out with my husband and my cat. Mm-hmm. But I don't know what else I'd want to do.
Yeah.
Eat some good food.
Yeah.
Be careful to chew very well so I don't choke on it.
Yeah.
And that's how I go down. But it's an interesting book. And I listened to the audiobook, and the audiobook was very good. And I've read some other Adam Silvera and really liked it. So he's one I'll check out again.
Yeah.
And then the other book that I read that isn't in contention for next year's battle, because one of the rules is it's supposed to be available in paperback, although we made a mistake this year, or the dates changed of release, because we have two hardcover books this year. So when we start reviewing books, we see when the paperback is scheduled to be released. But sometimes if a book is doing really well, then the dates change, or it's possible that whoever thought it was in paperback, it was like some foreign copy or something. I don't know. But so usually they have to be in paperback. And the other book that I read recently that I loved is Destroy All Monsters, the new Sam J. Miller book, which we had Sam on the show last week.
Yeah.
And it could be in consideration down the line if it comes out in paperback. I know Art of Starving is in consideration for this coming year, which is another Sam Miller book.
Yes, I would love that.
But I really enjoyed Destroy All Monsters. It's another sort of, I guess it's speculative fiction. It's like genre bending. It's a mix of contemporary fiction and fantasy. And it follows two characters, Solomon and Ash, who are lifelong friends. And when they were tweens, 12 years old, they both experienced a traumatic event, which has sort of shaped their lives moving forward. And Ash has lost all memory of the event because it involved a fall from a treehouse. And so she doesn't remember what happened, but she knows that Solomon hasn't been the same ever since. And Solomon has sort of retreated into this fantasy existence that he has. So she kind of feels some responsibility for him and feels like if she could only remember what happened, that she'd be able to help him. So that's sort of going on in the more contemporary fiction portion of the story. And then you also have a fantasy portion of the story, which is this fantastical world that Solomon lives in, where there's dinosaurs, and his friend Ash is known as the refugee princess and is sort of in her own little sort of shell, like something isn't quite the same with her. And so in one world, Ash is trying to save Solomon, and in the other world, Solomon's trying to save Ash. And the world's kind of bleed together at times in certain ways, and it's really interesting.
It's really cool how it has like two genres of young
mm-hmm.
young adult like fiction in there.
Yeah,
It was really fun, and I feel like they interconnected in really interesting ways. So it didn't feel like you were reading two separate stories, but you were in a way. Like they were connected, but they weren't exactly the same. I don't know how to explain it exactly, but they worked well against each other and with each other. And it's also fun because it's set in a fictionalized or alternate universe Hudson.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of familiar places talked about, like the Van Winkle Bridge or the river or certain streets in town or stores in town.
That's really
interesting. Going across the river to Catskill to go bowling, like that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I feel like Hudson's not in the books that often.
Yeah.
So it's fun when that happens. So very good book. Highly suggested. I also listened to that one on audio, and it had multiple readers because one's from Ash's perspective and one's from Solomon's, each part. So there was a narrator for each of those, or a reader for each of those.
Cool.
But yeah, so Destroy All Monsters by Sam J. Miller, our local author friend, and Bound by Books favorite.
Yeah.
So that's what I've been, finished reading. I'm currently reading the first volume of the Book of Dust series, which I think the second volume isn't, I think it's coming out soon. I don't think it's out yet. So it's the Book of Dust, Volume 1, La Belle Sauvage, which is the name of a boat in the book.
Ooh.
And it's set in the same world as the His Dark Materials trilogy, which is by Philip Pullman, who's the author of this book as well, which is The Golden Compass, The Subtle Knife, and The Amber Spyglass, which is a series that was out in the 90s that was very good, very popular, or maybe late 90s into early 2000s. And it was the first book was made into a movie that didn't do very well, and there's a, I think, BBC and HBO series coming out that is based on the His Dark Materials trilogy. So I'm hoping that is really good because I loved the books in the original trilogy, and then the movie was fun, but I understand why they didn't make more and why it was sort of not received that well. But this one is set earlier than The Golden Compass, and the main character in The Golden Compass is a baby in the story.
Aww.
And then some of the other characters from The Golden Compass are in it as well. But it's a fantasy world. It's set in England, and it's sort of a world similar to ours, like with the other books I've mentioned, except there's some unusual things going on. Like everybody has a daemon, this like animal creature that's connected to them, like can't leave their side by very much of a distance. There's sort of this tether, invisible tether between them.
Cool.
And then there's some interesting stuff going on. And it's got a lot of sort of espionage. It's sort of a mix of adventure and mystery so far. I'm about halfway through, so see if it keeps up. But it's definitely a book that I really am enjoying it, but I'm reading it for consideration for the Battle of the Books. And it's one of those books that is written for teens, or at least marketed for teens. But I wonder if it's more suited for adults that like teen fiction. I don't know. I'm curious. I haven't ever talked to a teenager who's read it. So I'm curious. I want to see if I can find some reviews online that are written by actual teens and see what they think of it.
Yeah.
See if they enjoy it. Because I'm enjoying it a lot, but something about the pacing makes me wonder if it will appeal to teens. So we'll see. But that's what I'm reading now.
Cool.
And then I have a huge stack of books to read next. I have no idea what I'm going to pick next. But I still have a ways to go on this one. So,
I have a little time. Stacks of books in our house.
Yeah, I just went a little wild and bought a bunch because I realized I really like reading books in paperback. And so every once in a while, I'll buy paperbacks. Because I feel like through the library, I can't always control if it's in paperback or hardcover when I'm borrowing it.
Yeah.
If I'm borrowing it from my own library, I can because I can feel it. It's right in front of me. But if I'm bringing it in from another library, I have no way to know ahead of time. I just want a nice, soft paperback. That's what I like for my summer reading, I guess.
I actually prefer hardcovers because I don't know, they just seem less delicate. I get nervous with paperbacks. I'm like, oh, where should I put them? I don't want them to get wrecked or anything.
Yeah, I guess when they're mine, I don't worry that much. When it's a library one, though, I actually really prefer the paperback books that have the nice plastic cover on them. That's like, so it's like a hard cover, but it's soft.
Oh, yeah.
that's my ideal book.
I just always get nervous because I've had school books before, like from the school that have been used years and years in a row. And I remember like picking up one day and just having like a bunch of the middle pages just fall out. And
that's no fun.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
It scared me. It startled me. I had to be really careful with that book.
Yeah, that's a tricky one.
I don't remember what book it was, though.
Well, hopefully they replaced it after you used it.
Most vivid memory was the pages falling out, but I don't remember what book it was.
Yeah, I've had that happen before where you open a book and it's like, oh, there you go. It's falling into pieces. They can't live forever. Unless they literally just sit on a shelf getting no use.
Yeah. But that would be sad.
Yeah, very sad. Poor book. Mm. Anyways, we also have a couple books we're going to share that are upcoming releases, or recent releases, I should say.
Cool.
Of books that I thought sounded pretty good. Do you want to go first?
Sure. Wilder Girls by Rory Power. It's been 18 months since the Raxter School for Girls was put under quarantine, since the talks hit and pulled Hetty's life out from under her. It started slow. First the teachers died one by one, then it began to infect the students, turning their bodies strange and foreign. Now cut off from the rest of the world and left to fend for themselves in their island home, the girls don't dare wander outside the school's fence, where the tox has made the woods wild and dangerous. They wait for the cure they were promised as the tox seeps into everything. But when Bayek goes missing, Hetty will do anything to find her, even if it means breaking quarantine and braving the horrors that lie beyond the fence. And when she does, Hetty learns that there's more to their story, to their life at Raxter, than she ever thought true. Interesting.
That book has the prettiest cover.
It does?
I've seen in so long. Ooh. Yeah, it sounds really good too, and I got good reviews, but...
I wish I could see it, but I am reading it off a page.
Oh, I'll try to look it up for you. But everyone at home has to look it up themselves, because we don't have that technology right now to send it through the radio, the image.
It's probably good. I'd probably be 10 times more awkward than I am on the radio if I had to, if I had a camera on me. It's like, hi.
They're watching us. Oh. No. But yeah, so the other book that is a recent release that I'm excited to read someday, once I'm allowed to read books that are only available in hardcover, as you remember my summer of paperback reading, is Pan's Labyrinth, The Labyrinth of the Faun by Guillermo del Toro and Cornelia Funke.
Ooh, isn't that a movie too?
Yeah, so my understanding of the book is that it's based on the movie.
Oh.
But it's written by the director of the movie and the writer of the movie, Guillermo del Toro, and Cornelia Funke, who wrote the Inkheart series and other sort of fantasy books like that.
Okay.
So I'm curious how it worked with them writing together. So here's the description. It says, Oscar-winning writer-director Guillermo del Toro and New York Times bestselling author Cornelia Funke have come together to transform del Toro's hit movie Pan's Labyrinth into an epic and dark fantasy novel for readers of all ages, complete with haunting illustrations, and enchanting short stories that flesh out the folklore of this fascinating world. This spellbinding tale takes readers to a sinister, magical, and war-torn world filled with richly drawn characters like trickster fauns, murderous soldiers, child-eating monsters, courageous rebels, and a long-lost princess hoping to be reunited with her family. A brilliant collaboration between masterful storytellers that's not to be missed.
It sounds like something that you'd get more out of if you had seen the movie beforehand.
I'm not sure how much it's going to be similar to the movie and how much will be different.
Yeah.
But the movie, I loved the movie. I saw it so long ago, and I need to watch it again.
I've never seen it. I just know that there is one monster with the eyes on its palm.
Yes. Terrifying. I feel like my most vivid recollection is about a root baby that's like screaming and crying.
Okay.
And I think about that every once in a while for whatever reason. I think it also, in the Harry Potter movies, I feel like there was some kind
of
screaming root.
Things?
Yeah, the mandrake root, yeah. I think. It was like a screaming mandrake.
Too.
And whenever I see that, I think of it as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, so those are two recent releases that both sound fabulous, that both have beautiful covers too, which again, you can't see through the radio, sorry, but look it up. So we're going to take a quick break. And for those listening on Sunday, we'll be right back with some more book talk. But for those listening Thursday, this is it for this week. So we hope you have a good week. Lots of quality reading time.
No. Los flecos, las trenzas para montar, bájale. El aire, los pardos para matar, bájale. Que, madre mía, Rosalía, bájale. Tacones lunares para matar, bájale. Los flecos, las trenzas para matar, bájale. El aire, los pardos para matar, bájale.
Madre mía, Rosalía, bájale.
Que la niña tenemos tumbado. A usted futuro todo regalado. Uñas de divan ya me las han copiado. Que te la clavo, niño, ten cuidado. Arriba nos ha señalado.
Welcome back. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Bound by Books Youth Radio on WGXC, Acre, Catskill, and Hudson, 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm Emily, and I'm here with Amelia.
Hello.
And we've been talking about books, and now we're going to read some poems.
Yeah.
Because we like poems. Mm-hmm. Hooray. So I'll start off with one by Lucille Clifton, Blessing the Boats at St. Mary's. May the tide that is entering even now the lip of our understanding carry you out beyond the face of fear. May you kiss the wind, then turn from it, certain that it will love your back. May you open your eyes to water, water waving forever, and may you in your innocence sail through this to that. I like her poems.
Found one called We Lived Happily During the War by Isla Kaminsky. I think this one is about the Vietnam War, if I'm remembering AP US history correct. I think that was around the 70s and 60s. And when they bombed other people's houses, we protested, but not enough. We opposed them, but not enough. I was in my bed, around my bed, America was falling, invisible house by invisible house by invisible house. I took a chair outside and watched the sun. In the sixth month of a disastrous rain, in the house of money, in the street of money, in the city of money, in the country of money, our great country of money, we, forgive us, lived happily during the war.
And I read one by June Jordan. These poems, they are things that I do in the dark, reaching for you, whoever you are, and are you ready? These words, they are stones in the water running away. These skeletal lines, they are desperate arms for my longing and love. I am a stranger, learning to worship the strangers around me. Whoever you are, whoever I may become.
It's nice. Found one called The Book of Questions, and I didn't notice here, but it says three, so I guess there's two more that I don't know about. By Pablo Neruda. Tell me, is the rose naked, or is that her only dress? Why do trees conceal the splendor of their roots? Who bears the regrets of the thieving automobile? Is there anything in the world sadder than a train standing in the rain? Mm. It's a short one, but I liked it.
I like that. Is there anything sadder than a train standing in the rain?
I know. Like, is the train okay?
I hope so.
I found one more, too. It's called Letter to Someone Living 50 Years From Now by Matthew Olsman. Most likely you think we hated the elephant, the golden toad, the thylacine, and all variations of whale harpooned or hacked into extinction. It must seem like we sought to leave you nothing, but benzene, mercury, the stomachs of seagulls rippled with jet fuel and plastic. You probably doubt that we were capable of joy, but I assure you we were. We still had the night sky back then, and like our ancestors, we admired its illuminated doodles of scorpion outlines and upside-down ladles. Absolutely, there were some forests left. Absolutely, we still had some lakes. I'm saying it wasn't all lead paint and sulfur dioxide. There were bees back then, and they pollinated a euphoria of flowers so we might contemplate the great mysteries and finally ask, hey guys, what's transcendence? And then all the bees were dead. I actually didn't pre-read that one. That's the best I've ever done, just reading something right off the bat.
Yeah, it's always a challenge, especially with, I feel like sometimes the way that poems are laid out, sometimes the punctuation isn't quite where it would normally be, or isn't at all.
Yeah.
So sometimes it's
like
interesting.
Like, sentence will sometimes be in complete opposite stanzas, just split down the middle, and I'm just like, wait, what?
That's part of the fun and creativity and imagination. Yay. But yeah, so those are some lovely poems by some lovely people. I hope they're lovely. I guess I don't know them all. The ones I know are lovely. But we hope you've enjoyed some of these poems. We found these on poets.org.
Yeah.
And you can find these and others on that site. There's tons and tons of poems on there. And you can look them up by theme and author. But we're out of time for today. So we hope everyone has a good week.
Yep.
Reads lots of good books.
Happy reading.
Bye.
Feels good waking up in your way. My heart needed a holiday. I bet we can make things slide in a Monday. I bet living with no regrets. Love was just a night at best. Two step, making the weekend slide. Into something. One more night with you always turns to two. I can't help it, cause it feels right when it feels right.
Cause it feels like I'm dead.
You back, don't ask nothing I want to say. We know timing isn't right.
Maybe one day.
Till then, spill me a free weekend. You're my complicated friend. I'm just keeping the dream alive. But I must say, one more night with you always turns to two. I can't help it, cause it feels right when it feels right.
Cause it feels.
Twice he's sworn and cheered with my friends. What a big win, but I'm not really sure. No, 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 I'm not really sure.
And he can play ball, come on.
That first lady, Riga, was she lucky, were we? But I'm not really sure, no, no, no.
45, a real nosedive for American lives. Cause he's not really sure. Oh, no. No, he's not really sure. I'm so transfixed. He's dumb as bricks. A magic show with no tricks. Of the spell he's unsure. Oh, no. No, Donald Paul is not sure. That I am sure.
I wish we could bring back Obama, Michelle, Malia, Sasha, all of them lost them. Now we're stuck with this imposter. Why can't we just toss them like we did 1773 with the T and the C up in Boston? Brown folks still under siege, women still underpaid, LGBTQ still underbooed, and this dude known to grab him by the cooch still under investigation. No need for saving face, we are out saving grace. Say your last prayers, red cap wearers, make America great again, never Wakanda forever.
We're talking with Joanne Cunningham, who's a member of the Albany County Legislature, and she is the sponsor of two bills that are coming up for a hearing next week. One bill would impose a fee on paper bags. The state has already banned plastic bags. This would be a fee on paper bags, and then the second would be to restrict the use of straws in restaurants and other places. So Joanne, why don't we start off with the paper bag issue? What's the motivation for that?
Sure. Well, first of all, thank you for having me. I appreciate the opportunity. I introduced a plastic bag ban / fee local law back in February. I was very committed to having pushed the issue in front of the Albany County Legislature and felt strongly that we should be doing more to stem our addiction to plastic bags, single-use plastic in particular, but plastic bags. The governor then and the state legislature, of course, included a plastic bag ban as part of the state budget this year, and so the issue of the bag ban actually was kind of taken off the table, which is a good thing. We have a statewide plastic bag ban going into effect as a result of the governor's work and the state legislature's work that will go into effect in March. So what they did in the state law, though, in the finalized agreement, was they allowed municipalities to then have the option of instituting a fee on paper bags. So what I did then is rewrite my bill, which is Local Law D, if any of your listeners are looking for it, to comply or comport with the now state law that bans plastic bags. So what I did is look at the language and essentially amend my bill to allow for a 5-cent fee for any use of any paper bag in Albany County shopping establishments. And this, again, comports with the state law. And I think that's the right way to go. I think that without a fee, we are likely to see a proliferation of the use of paper bags, which is also, you know, costly to the environment. And so what we want to do is create disincentives for folks to just move from plastic to paper bags. So a fee will help accomplish that.
Well, could you maybe briefly articulate, you know, what are some of the concerns, say, with the use of paper bags? Because isn't paper, you know, for instance, recyclable?
Yes. I mean, paper is better, but it is, you know, it's also, you know, creating unnecessary waste. And yes, it can be recycled, but, you know, the preferable thing is for consumers to, you know, sort of train themselves to use recyclable bags so that we're not generating pollution at all or generating you know, excess energy in producing paper or plastic bags. So paper is better, but, you know, there's also data to show that, you know, there is an environmental cost to the production of paper. So the best way to go is to incentivize and create, you know, powerful incentives for consumers to just bring recyclable bags.
How has some of the supermarkets responded to the issue of going to a fee on a paper bag?
Well, it's funny because initially I talked to some of my local constituent market folks as well as others. And at that point, and I actually have a follow-up meeting this Friday with somebody who's representative of supermarkets. You know, at that point, though, there was a concern that there wouldn't be a fee because a lot of the stores are looking at the cost to them of a now paper bag. And I think I was told at that point that, you know, a plastic bag for a store costs them about 2 cents a bag, and a paper bag costs much more, 9 cents, I think I remember. So without a fee, you know, we don't want to stick the stores with the cost of now having to absorb you know, the cost of giving their customers a paper bag. So I am planning on, again, I have a meeting set up for this Friday to talk to them more, but I suspect that they don't mind a fee that much because a fee will disincentivize the use of paper bags, which is, of you know, a tremendous cost to them.
So we're talking with Joanne Cunningham, a member of the Albany County Legislature. There will be a hearing next Tuesday at 7:15 in the Albany County Courthouse on these two pieces of legislation. So the second piece of legislation would restrict, I believe, plastic straws and various food outlets in the county to sort of make it on, you know, you have to request it rather than just
yes.
always giving it to you. Can you explain why you think it's important for us to, you know, also reduce
sure.
our use of plastic straws?
Sure. In many ways, the straws on request local law is kind of a message bill. You know, it's essentially trying to create awareness by asking our Albany County restaurants before they just hand out a plastic straw to their customers, which is a pretty regular practice if you sit down at a restaurant or at a counter. A pretty regular practice is if you buy a beverage for the restaurant just to hand you a plastic straw that many times isn't even used by the consumer and ends up in the trash in, you know, 100% of the cases. So this is meant to encourage restaurants and require restaurants, rather than just automatically distributing the straw, to say to the consumer, would you like a straw? The consumer then can make a choice about whether they would like the straw or not like the straw. Many consumers do prefer using straws. I've heard from folks who represent or and are concerned about, you know, the disability community, folks who are elderly, and you know, and you know, there is a use for straws in certain constituencies, and we certainly don't want to preclude them from being able to easily drink, you know, a beverage. But we want to create awareness that straws are single-use plastic. They end up in the trash and the landfill and our waterways, and they do not decompose, and they end up in, you know, inside animals. And, you know, there's a very, very powerful video I saw from one of the worldwide environmental groups that, you know, showed a straw that was lodged up, I think, the, you know, nostril or a cavity of a turtle, and, you know, obviously creating tremendous discomfort and hardship. And, you know, we've got to make some changes and choices, and we've got to create awareness about the proliferation and our addiction to single-use plastic, including and especially straws.
We have a little bit over a minute left. I was actually stunned, read some data, and probably don't have it correct, but it was like, hundreds of millions of these straws, you know, are used on a daily basis in the United States. And
absolutely.
So much of them end up in a waste stream. So, you know, the plastic bag, the paper bag fee, that's sort of something the state has left to the county option, but kind of to a certain extent, no-brainer. Now that we have the plastic bag ban to take effect, I guess, next March. But my assumption is that the plastic straw, being a little bit of a newer issue, might be a little bit harder to pass any in the last minute. Sort of what can people do? What are some of the concerns that people may be raising? How can Albany County residents help out with this?
Well, first of all, on the 23rd, which is next Tuesday at 7:15, as you mentioned, we have a public hearing that focuses on these two local laws, the bag fee and the straws on request. I would encourage Albany County residents to come and talk to us about this and tell us their thoughts. What did we get right? What did we get wrong? What haven't we thought of? And what do you think about this? And I think everybody, you know, should participate in government and let us know, you know, what they think about these local laws. And, you know, are there better ways to discourage the use of single-use plastic? Because I think we've got to do something. We're on a trajectory that is very frightening and damaging to the environment, and we all know it. So let's make some change. So
tell us, Joanne,
if we're on the right track.
We're out of time. It's been Joanne Cunningham, Albany County Legislature, next Tuesday, 23rd. The hearing. This has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Radio Network.
That was Big Chief from Professor Longhair on the radio.
It's WGXC 90.7 FM.
Right.
Accra.
Keep going.
Hudson, Catskill, Phoenicia, and lots of other places.
That's an interesting addition.
And Valencia.
And
or
Valencia.
As they usually call it when you first land in Columbia County.
Valati.
Valati.
Very well done. Did you mention the online way
and to online at WGXC.org.
Yes.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the Science of Aesthetics Laser and Med Spa, offering a wide variety of multifaceted cosmetic services at 810 Union Street in Hudson. Consultations are available. Information at 518-697-5390 and scienceofaesthetics.net.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Cornelius Eady of New York, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You, too, can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.